editor of ProFootballTalk.com. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys.
What's up, man?
You triggered a lot of people here in the D.C. area.
Okay.
Can you fill us in on kind of your article about what you think the Commanders are doing by bringing back these old uniforms and some of the things they've done in recent times?
What's the quote that Michael Scott used that was from Wayne Gretzky? No, that wasn't that quote. His quote, that was the you miss every shot you take or some crap like that. The other Gretzky quote is you don't skate to where the puck is, you skate to where the puck's going to go.
All right.
And ever since Josh Harris bought the team, remember when he bought the team, he used the old name like three times the first day. Mm-hmm. And Magic Johnson tweeted it. And there was a flurry of reporting and questions posed to the team. Hey, are you setting up a return of the old name? No. Harumph, no. And then Dan Quinn shows up at that press conference last May with the non-licensed shirt that had the two feathers on it. And, no. And when you look at what's going on and you broaden the lens, they're trying to get that stadium built. They're trying to get D.C. Council to move forward. There has been reporting, and I think Phil Mendelson, the D.C. Council chair, has said he's heard talk that they may run to the president and get the president to help break this logjam so they can get the thing open in time to try to host the Women's World Cup and the Rugby World Cup, yada, yada. And you got the president saying, I never would have changed the name. Hmm. And then these uniforms land, which look exactly like the old uniforms. And almost every image I saw of the new uniform has the helmet positioned at an angle where you can't see the logo on the side. And it looks like you're looking at 1985 Washington football. And then that video, and I missed the video when it came out, but when I saw that video early yesterday morning as I was doom scrolling, I couldn't believe my eyes, because for a team that has completely shied away from any imagery that uses the old logo, they were all in. They were cannonball in the deep end of the pool. And I just think it's part of this dance of, you know, inching, maybe, oh, no, we have no plans. We're not considering it. Ooh, look at this. Hey, look at that. Oh, well, you know, hey, if the president wants it, and he's going to help us get this stadium built. Well, you know, we got no. I just feel like it's something to watch. And I saw that someone was like, "Oh, I'm trying to muster up opposition." I don't care. Whatever they do, they do. I don't care about that. But I think it's a fascinating story to monitor because it feels like something's going on.
Here's the pushback I'd give you: is that when Jason Wright was even here, they were still incorporating the old logo and the, you know, in certain areas of the stadium, or, you know, they would do like, I don't know, a Daryl Green room or something, or, you know, like even they were trying to incorporate the old with the new, even in the past administration. So I just don't think that that's really a thing, to be honest with you, Mike.
Yeah. I feel like it's something that's out there. It's something that's potential. It's a series of mini trial balloons, and I think the biggest trial balloon is the one that came this week. And when you look at the reaction to it, and it's been predominantly positive, that's just another thing that you file away. And I don't care that Josh Harris has said they're not going back to the old name. Dan Snyder said never, and you can put it in all caps as to changing the name in the first place. So what people say, if we've learned nothing else over the last 10 years of our political life, what people say does not matter. What people say has a shelf life that is, like, you know, shorter than any perishable food item you could think of.
Right. But here's the problem, I think, when you look at it from a practical standpoint, and I wish they had never changed it. I wish it should have stayed the Redskins. I think it's ridiculous. But whatever, the market spoke. They changed it. They pulled the money. Even if the political winds changed and they got some sort, maybe the scenario you said played out and the president got involved and pressured him and that got him a stadium, if they change, you know, what's going to prevent them 3 or 4 years from now when the political winds change again and then a big advertiser steps up and says, yeah, we're pulling the money. It just makes them too vulnerable. I don't think they want to open themselves up to that.
Well, that's part of the question they're going to have to ask themselves and what they need to consider if they would ultimately do this is if you go back to the old name, you just have to tell the world, we don't care what you think. And you can write about it all you want. You can do polls all you want. You can write opinion pieces all you want. You can protest all you want. This is the name of the team.
They
this
do that until the name, they pull the money, Mike. When they pull the money, well, you know, but, based on political wins.
Unless the world's different.
Yeah, when they pull the money, then it all goes away.
But there's one very big difference. Yeah. Josh Harris is not Dan Snyder. And I think that the stew of factors that led to the decision in July of 2020 to change the name, that was as much, if not more, about Snyder and about the late Fred Smith trying to extricate himself from partnership with Snyder.
I agree.
Because it was the FedEx pressure that really got that ball rolling. And I think it was Ron Rivera as well who was pushing and pushing and pushing. But that's all part of this. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just saying there's enough of a flirtation with it that it would be foolish to think a multi-billion dollar organization isn't at some level monitoring the reaction and factoring it in to future decisions. And, you know, maybe they just bring back the logo and not the name. Maybe they bring back the logo for a certain period of time and let's see how permanent the current political change in the winds will last. And maybe at some point the name does come back, or maybe it just comes back on the legacy weekend. I don't know. I just think that, well, I know the idea that the door is slammed shut on the old name, which is kind of what I thought they were doing, that's done. Because when those uniforms landed this week, they did everything but bring back the old name and the old logo. So, and they kind of know what they're doing. They kind of have that, you know, that glint in the eye as they do it. They know, and the fans know.
Yeah, but they're also doing it because there was unrest. Forget about the name. People hated the uniforms.
Well, that's right, but I think the uniforms look a lot better when you win. You know, the Bengals uniforms look like crap. I almost said the other word until they went to the Super Bowl in 2021. Then they look great.
Right.
Yep. No, the Bengals uniforms look great all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, Mike is... that looks like a pumpkin that's, you know, is somebody on meth carved up. Oh, that looks great now.
Right. Mike, has your personal opinion on the name changed?
I'm so worn down by our current political reality that I just don't care about anything anymore. How about that?
I think that's fair.
Florio.
I think that's fair.
They win. I don't care. I have become apathetic. I have become what they want. Somebody who just sits here and says, can we just please end this?
All right. Where do you stand?
Good morning. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Where do you stand on the team's prospects, the chances of kind of duplicating what they did last year?
I think that, and the question came up last Friday on my slow time daily podcast. We shut down PFT Live for 6 weeks when it's slow, but it's never slow. So I do 45 minutes a day on my own. Somebody asked what I think of a Bills-Rams Super Bowl. And I said, hey, those are two of the teams that are in the window. Every year there's 10 or 12 teams that are in the window. And there's a team or two that can defy that and play their way into the window. But this year, Commanders are one of the teams in the window. They are one of the teams in the window. I was on in Dallas yesterday, and they were trying to get upset because they don't have the Cowboys in the window. And, you know, ultimately they agreed. Like, they're not. They're just not. Mm. And the Commanders are. Now, have they closed the gap sufficiently with the Eagles? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how much from last year carries over. You know, the team, the players, they're a little on the older side. Can they duplicate what they did last year? What's Jaden Daniels going to do in year two after defenses have had a full offseason to study what he did last year and try to crack the code a little more cleanly on how to beat him. But I think they're in the window, and it's up to them at this point. But, you know, there's five teams in each conference that I'd look at as being seriously in the window with maybe another one or two on the fringes, but they're one of the five in the NFC.
Mike, how do you see this Terry McLaurin situation playing out?
They're going to have to pay him. Look, $15.5 million. In the last year of his contract, the market's now north of $40 million. This is his last best shot to get paid. I think he turns 30 in September.
Yep.
So this is the time to get paid. And It's a deadline-driven business. It depends on when both sides believe the clock strikes 12. You know, the Cowboys' attitude is the clock doesn't strike 12 until week one, and if the guy holds out, so be it. It's just more publicity for the team. I don't think that's conducive to winning. The goal should be to try to get this thing done and resolved before the first day of training camp and not have a holdout, not have a hold-in, not have acrimony, come up with a proper value. And the complication is when you go pick up Deebo Samuel's contract and you're paying him this year and he's making more cash than Terry McLaurin, that's another sticking point. And I don't think it's a question of whether or not they think he should get another contract. I think the easy answer to that is yes. Does he deserve a contract? Yes. The question is, how do you get the two sides on the same page as to how much that contract should be worth? Is he a north of 30 guy? Is he a south of 30 guy? And 30 may be the magic number. I don't know. And, you know, for some players, all that matters is the APY that gets tweeted by by the insiders who get the best possible characterization of the contract from the agent when the contract is done. And there may be some bullcrap back end numbers that drive the average higher. Tyreek Hill's deal had that to get him to 30 when it wasn't 30. Devontae Adams' deal when he signed with the Raiders, it had back-end bullcrap to get him to 28. You can do stuff like that if it's about the player. And I don't want to say this in a pejorative way, that it's about his ego, because the APY has become the measuring stick among players on different teams. And that's how you – that's your status symbol. What's my APY? It doesn't matter if it's not backed up by reality. So if that's part of it, they could put something together that pays him as a practical matter less than that number, but gets him to a number that he can feel good about.
Don't they also care about the guaranteed number, though, too? That's really the number?
Well, what's really the number is the cash flow over the first 2 or 3 years and how much of it's fully guaranteed at signing. How's it structured? Some of these deals are structured with rolling guarantees where you've got 3 years as a practical matter that you're going to get, even if it's not fully guaranteed at signing. There's all sorts of ways to do it. But the cash flow, the structure, you know, the stuff that we dig into when the contract finally is submitted and filed with the union and the league, and we get a copy of it and we break it down. Of course, by then, everybody's moved on. But we try to explain after we discern, what is this deal really worth? And most importantly, when can the team rip it up? These are not two-way contracts. The player is under contract for as long as the contract covers. The team can tear it up at any point, and the question becomes figuring out, as a practical matter, the earliest date when the team can rip it up and move on. And, you know, the more guarantees you have, the cap consequences, et cetera, it ties the team to the player, possibly beyond when the team wants to be tied to the player. That's what this whole thing about fully guaranteed contracts and collusion and the Deshaun Watson deal. You know, Deshaun Watson would be long gone from Cleveland by now if he had done a standard quarterback deal. But because it was a five-year fully guaranteed contract, here he is still on the roster going into year four because they're stuck. So those are the factors that become important when we see the back end of the deal. How long is the team stuck with a player who possibly is descending? That's the concern
right. When
you get a guy who's about to turn 30.
Mike, what's the likelihood or possibility they just franchise him and then, you know, typically players don't like that. How often do guys get franchised and yet they still work out a long-term deal so that it doesn't lead to like an inevitable breakup in a year or two?
Well, here's the key. His cap number this year is 25.5, I believe. So that would mean his franchise tag would be a 20% raise.
It's like
over
30
his
million.
Cap number
it's like 30
of his contract. So yeah. It's over 30 million.
Yeah.
It would be over 30 million to franchise tag him next year, and that money's fully guaranteed. And, you know, he ends up making $45 million over 2 years in cash, but he's got to get to the franchise tag. They may decide after this year that they don't want a franchise tag. Mm-hmm. From his perspective, this is the time to get paid. And the gap between him and other receivers is glaring. Now, he's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. But he's not a $15 million a year guy, too. And this is one of the problems with the back end of a second contract. When the total average is in the 20s and you've got $15 million in cash flow the last year, well, your average was much higher. By the time you get to the last year, it doesn't matter. By the time you get to the last year, this is what I'm making. I'm making $15 million, and other guys are making $35, $40 million. I want more. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised they haven't worked it out yet, but it tells me that McLaurin must want a hell of a lot more than what the Commanders have budgeted And I just, one way or the other, you know, and I've said this about other players on other teams, you got two choices, pay the guy or don't. And if you're not going to pay him, then trade him to someone who will. But if you're trying to parlay last year into a step forward this year and your guy's not happy, you either need to get him happy or you need to think about moving on. Because just like the 49ers did with Deebo Samuel, it just reached the natural ending point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still under contract for another year, but he's not happy and they weren't happy with that. Like, why are we going to force this? And so I think that's what they need to do, either get him happy or think about alternatives, because I don't think it helps any team to have a guy around who isn't happy with his contract, who's in the last year of his deal, because all of a sudden those injuries that you play through, you're not playing through them anymore. And I can't blame a player who doesn't have security beyond this year for saying, yeah, you know what, my hamstring's tight, I'm not going to go out there and risk tearing it and being out for months and putting bad film out there and not getting paid next year.
Joined by Mike Florio, editor of ProFootballTalk.com, and you've got a new book, Big Shield, which is available in paperback and ebook for, I believe, 99 cents. Is that right?
Just the ebook. The paperback's $14.99. Paper ain't free, and it's coming out August 19. You can pre-order it now. And this is something that is direct product of the Supreme Court opening the floodgates for state-by-state legalized gambling back in May of 2018. I've been concerned about the ways that a scandal in the NFL could undermine the integrity of the game. I worry about it far more, I think, than 345 Park Avenue does. But I've tried to envision a very simple set of facts that is very plausible as to how the mob, in an age of widespread legalized gambling, can get its hooks into a player. And one of the ways to do it, and I don't think the NFL worries about this nearly enough, is inside information, which is prevalent inside of a building in all forms and fashions. Who's injured, who's not, who's going to be featured on Sunday, who isn't, what's the game plan, what's the first 15 plays, and then up to and including with real-time betting that's becoming more and more prevalent, what's happening during the game. What's the next play going to be? Is it going to be a run? Is it going to be a pass? And is there a way someone on the sideline who knows, maybe, you know, a backup quarterback who's got the radio in his helmet, can signal to someone what the next play is going to be and what do they do with that information? So that's the premise. And, you know, I've tried to use that premise to create a story that hopefully is entertaining and engaging. But at the end of the day, you know, I told myself the NFL is going to hate this book, but they should like it, because if players would read it, they probably will come away from it thinking, I shouldn't cozy up to, you know, the guy with one eyebrow and the gold chains who just wants a little information and he's going to give me a little money and the relationship goes from there.
Well, look, you've seen the Malik Beasley situation in the NBA, so it's not a stretch that it could happen in the NFL.
Oh, and I've got because the main mob character in this has a full array of athletes in all sports. And there's an NBA player who's doing some of the Jonte Porter stuff. He was the guy who was pulling himself out of games early, and there was unusual activity on the unders for his various props. The prop bets are the thing. See, it's not about rigging games. It's about those prop bets. And if you have the information, or if you have a player who will engineer his way out of a game before he hits his overs, that's the surest way to win on his unders.
Mm. Good stuff.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it, buddy.
Talk to you soon,
man.
Thank
you, guys. Good talking to you.
All right, pal.
Yes, sir.